Wake up, folks.
We've really got to quit letting our guests pick the music, man. No, this is good, isn't it?
Real good.
Just jump out of bed, get going. It's a great day.
Get started with Bo Mitchell, Bob Belts. You get the blessing. Thank you, Lori Lynn. Let's hear a little more of that. I got a new friend, Bob.
You know, Ernie and Ella are not going to know what that song was.
Ernie will now.
Right.
My new friend, Rob Parsons, I heard him speak at Focus on the Family about 2 weeks ago, and he's from England, and he's brilliant. I think he runs Care for the Family in England, kind of like Focus on the Family here. And he said, I promise you this, folks, they're not having a committee meeting in heaven today because your 14-year-old son wants to wear a baseball cap to church. Or because the guy sitting next to you has on blue jeans and a tattoo, or because Bob Belts and Bo Mitchell start their program with rock and roll music. So he said the only one having a problem with that maybe is you, because heaven's not shook up over that. Well, you agree, don't you?
Absolutely.
Point is, folks, we're glad you tuned in, and we're glad we get to start with some rock and roll. You Get the Blessing is about introducing you to guests each week that you meet who are going to bless you by the stories they tell about their lives and what they're doing with their lives. And today, our guest is a good friend of mine, Evan Crist. Evan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've had a rough month here. Bob Belts and I have lost Dr. Vernon Grounds, and Richard Beach died the month of October. They have been heaven-bound for quite a while, and now they are with new bodies and doing whatever it is they do in heaven every day. What do you think they're up to today, Bob?
You know, I sent out a little note to a bunch of friends of mine yesterday, just reflecting on the month, and I said, I'm envious of Jesus because he gets to hang out with Rich. And then I said, and I'm envious of Rich because he gets to hang out with Jesus. So anyway.
You emailed that out to 1,000 people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, we miss those guys, but I appreciate that there's leaders in the world like Evan Crist who are cutting people off at the pass that might be heading the wrong direction. And we're going to talk about what Evan does today and how he befriends the people he works with, and how he has been trained as a PhD in psychology for the life God's giving him, has given him, and how good he is at what he does. But let's start with just some background, Evan, on where you're from and what it looked like around your house when you were growing up.
Well, I'm originally from Kentucky. I told somebody that once, and they looked at my feet and said, oh, I'm surprised that you've got shoes on.
Is that what people think?
I would think, like, why don't you have horseshoes on from Kentucky? I don't know.
And I would think of Dan Issel.
Absolutely. But I grew up in North Carolina. I spent most of my life there, went to University of North Carolina for undergraduate. Fell in love with psychology, decided I wanted to get a PhD in it, applied to a handful of PhD programs, and University of Denver was the only silly one that accepted me. So that brought me out here.
That really, what year was that?
92.
Is that where you fell in love with your wife and
it
changed
is.
Another course of your life?
It absolutely is. Her sister was actually in my PhD program a couple years ahead of me. And the program had a whitewater rafting trip, and Lisa, her sister, invited Andrea. And the way I tell the story is that she fell out of the raft and I saved her, and you know, it was all history from there. That's not exactly how it happened, but that's where it started.
you got a good memory there, though. So God did equip you with a sharp, deep waters brain, and you did something with it. I imagine that course of study was plenty complicated for you, but you were great at it, I'm sure.
You know, I loved it so much that it never felt that complicated to me. I mean, one of the nice things about graduate school is you're only studying stuff that you love, for the most part. I mean, in undergraduate, you got to take all this other stuff that supposedly will be meaningful someday. But in graduate school, it's all psychology all the time, and it doesn't get any better than that for me.
So we're going to have so many stories when we get to what you do. I want to move quickly to it, but what Evan Chris does, our guest today, is run an organization called Time to Change Community Corrections, and you've been doing that for about 10 years. I know where there were other things and projects you were doing with your life, but let's focus on this one. How did your background in psychology and, I guess, what were the necessary steps to create Time to Change, and what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, it started when I moved to New Hampshire for 2 years after graduating from the University of North Carolina and worked at a treatment program up there that worked with a lot of inner-city Boston kids, emotionally disturbed kids, kids that were sick in a variety of different ways. And I was just really drawn to the inner-city gang kids from Boston. And over a period of time, just found that those were that was my favorite population to work with, and nobody else really liked them. They were terrified of them. And I just found that after you can break through that veneer, they're just regular people, and really enjoyed them. And so I fell in love with that population, and when I came out to University of Denver, continued that and started some gang intervention groups at some of the local high schools. Ended up writing my dissertation on gang members and what is it, how does the process of change work for gang members in them deciding to leave that lifestyle and do something different. So all that being said, to explain that my love for gang members kind of backed me into the corrections world in general. And I started working at a local halfway house doing therapy with gang members. And one thing,
like counseling and sessions with individuals and groups. And
right, right. Mostly group stuff, because we just found that it's a whole lot easier to pull the wool over a therapist's eyes if there's only one person in the room. But if there's seven other gang members in the room, somebody's going to call foul and somebody's telling a tall tale.
Oh, well, you can tell Bob already. This guy is brilliant. Actually, since Vernon Grounds passed, I can say comfortably now, Bob's the smartest guy I know. Yes, he is. He is. And it's why we work as perfect co-hosts. Really smart, not so smart. But you present to me, Evan, this incredible intellect, but big personality and also street smarts. And it's interesting, God. Bob, I'm going to call you God. It's interesting, God, that we refer to Bob. It's interesting, yeah. Bob, that we think of God as a God of the miraculous, but he's also a God of order and logic, I think. And it's interesting when you meet a leader like this that's just equipped step by step and then ends up doing something that's changing the lives of so many.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because really, you know, God is a God of creation, by the way. And we've got these two words, chaos, which obviously means no order, you know, just, you know, a total mess. And then the word cosmos, which, you know, kind of the world word for our world or our universe, which literally means ordered. So, I mean, God is the author of, you know, of that kind of systematic and meaningful and designed and purposeful, but he's obviously wired Evan in a unique way. First of all, I'd never guess, just kind of because we've just met for the first time, you know, I would never guess that what you do is what you do, you know,
because
you
is got that such because a, I look like a hobo?
No, it's because you really. By the way, I haven't heard anything yet that would make me think that you're as smart as Bo said. But no, just kidding.
Well, I have. I now agree with Bo. Yeah. I learned about cosmos and chaos, and so I just met you, and now
I'm
you
just
are.
Joking. No, no, just joking. Anyway, you almost seem like a guy that I would think would, you know, work with kids and kind of a youth pastor guy.
Yeah.
And you work with some of the toughest people.
And handles
the outside.
Loves them and handles them.
Yeah.
Because he's got this wit and this personality, but he's got the hard part too.
I do love them, and I guess I want to be careful in not sounding more altruistic than I actually am, because I do this because I love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's I guess I'm lucky that God allowed me to do something that I really love, support my family in doing it, and something that's clearly a calling from Him. You know, I guess on any given day, I might tell somebody that I do it because God called me to do it, and I think He did. But I don't want it to sound more altruistic than it actually is. I love it and get a lot out of it. And I actually think anybody that does this, I think I get more out of it than the clients get.
So you have two facilities and a couple hundred people on most days in your program. Describe the client that's in your program and how they get there.
They get there through a lifetime of bad decisions for the most part. But there's a couple of ways that they can get there. If you commit a felony in the state of Colorado, you can go to a judge, and the judge has several options.
Those are not good things to do, by the way. Commit a felony or go to a judge. I can just tell you that.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Not going to work out for you usually.
Right. Yeah, and they're not going down for spitting on the sidewalk. But if you commit a felony and you go to the judge, he has several options, everything from probation to Department of Corrections, which is prison. About half of our clients are what we call diversion clients. And those are the guys that went to the judge and the judge said, well, what you did was bad enough that I'm not going to give you probation, not so bad that I'm going to give you prison. Why don't we try community corrections and see if you can get your life back together?
And they call you.
Well, it's the whole system that we have set up and where they apply to the halfway house and we review the case and decide whether we think that they're serious about changing their life and go from there.
So what happens when someone comes and enters into your process? Kind of give us a picture of what that looks like.
It's like checking into Broadmoor, I can tell you that. You got the bellman up front, brings you into the desk, asks you want the west or the east.
It's similar to that. They do walk in the door. It's a very tough process for these guys. We do everything we can to try to help them with this transition. By the way, the other half of our clients are guys that have been to prison, and they have just 18 months or so left on their sentence, and they're going to they're called transition clients, and they come to community corrections on their way back to the community rather than just prison cutting them loose and saying good luck. But the start of the program is pretty much the same for both types of populations. We keep them in-house for about 4 days just so they can settle down and not get antsy and not decide that they don't want this and take off too quickly. But they have to get a full-time job. That's all part of the deal. They have to pay rent. We offer lots of different treatment programs. The vast majority of our clients have substance abuse problems. And what I've found from the day I first started working with these clients is that when they're clean and sober, most of them are really good guys and really somebody you really enjoy spending time with, but alcohol or drugs in these guys, and they can make some really horrible decisions and do some really bad things. But we do what we can to help them get a job.
That can't be easy. Just talking earlier about how guys coming out, particularly, I'm becoming more aware through our friend Jeff Cromendyke, because Jeff's really has a heart for these guys coming out of prison, and what he said is, boy, it's just really, really hard for these guys to find jobs. And
it really is a challenge. The worst I've seen it in the decade that we've done it was February of 2009, when the recession was really starting to deepen. We normally run about 85% of our clients have jobs, and at that point we had about 44%, and so it was kind of frightening for everybody. But it seems to have picked up. But it is a challenge, and these guys, one of our requirements is once they've finished orientation, they have to go on job search every single day until they get a job, and on job search, they have to contact at least 5 different employers. So sometimes they're out there for 3 months doing job search every single day, hearing no at least 5 times a day, and getting up the next day and doing the same thing.
So and that's got to knife you. Our guest is Evan Chris. This is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. Bob Belt's my co-host, and I enjoy each week introducing you listeners to guests that we think are making such a positive impact for this community and around the world. So typical day then, in addition to the job search, would include some therapy from your staff. And what size staff do you have there, Evan?
Well, we've got about in each facility, give or take a couple, we've got 7 or 8 security staff that are just there to make sure that that we don't have chaos. That's a new word that I just learned from Bob.
they're creating cosmos.
Right. The security staff are making sure there's the absence of chaos, and then the case managers try to create cosmos.
Okay, that's it.
Okay,
you got it.
You guys are getting along well. I like that.
So eight or nine security staff, six or seven case managers. The case managers are really something of a marriage between a therapist, a probation officer, and a teacher. Takes a very versatile set of skills to try to hold these guys accountable and at the same time try to help them, not just hammer them. But a typical day is a real challenge. I don't think I could do it. We don't allow these guys to drive while they're in the program. I initially didn't like that idea. I thought we were just making life for them harder, but decided early on that there were lots of people smarter than me in this business, and they've been doing that for a long time, so I might just hang out and find out what the reason is. And now I think it's a beautiful thing. When you take public transportation, you have to slow down and plan every part of your day, and that's something these guys have never done. But since these guys have to take public transportation, a lot of these guys are getting up at 4, 4:30, riding the bus for a couple hours to get to work, working mostly manual labor jobs, getting home sometime between 4 and 6, grabbing dinner, which is probably not what you get at the Broadmoor, and probably 3-4 nights a week they're in some sort of either therapy class or life skills class, like just problem solving or parenting or financial management.
So you're approved by, licensed by, supervised by the Federal Corrections Institute, the judicial system, the Bureau of Prisons, which?
Not federal, state.
State, okay.
Right. In community correction programs, there are 35 throughout the state, and they're all licensed by the local jurisdictions. So the money comes from the state through the county, and then the county contracts with vendors.
So you go... You've obviously been through the whole process of being approved, having your staff approved. I know you enough to know how tight your ships run and the details you attend to. But in the midst of that, I know you're also kind of a fun guy, a tough guy, a communicator. Are there ever any light moments for these people, or is it all just heavy? I guess I'm getting to some of the tools you use to motivate them, like what we talked about earlier, catching them doing something good.
Right. No, there's lots of light moments, and probably more than you would expect. Because once these guys realize that they don't have to continue the same lifestyle and they don't have to use drugs, and they've had a full-time job for the first time in their life and they're feeling good about themselves for the first time, there's a lot of good relationships that develop, a lot of teasing and camaraderie that goes on. I'll tell you one of the things that I think just shocks people when they find out about it. You'd be amazed at how much these guys help each other.
Good.
When somebody walks in for the first time, it's not unusual for two or three other guys to grab them and go, "Hey, I think my place might be hiring. You know, let me help you with your locker and show you the ropes." And we've got a mentor system set up and so forth. But there's a lot of light moments, and we have a softball team. This year we were 0-12, and
but had a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, but the
winning's not everything.
But there were no stolen bases, so we were pleased with that.
You're good. You are good, my friend. Tell them about the concept of that I just learned from this Rob Parsons guy about catching. He was referring to children. You got to catch them doing something right and stay on that. Reinforce it. And give them that kind of feedback, and you do it really well. I like your stories.
Well, it's just it's about people. It's not about children or adults. It's about human nature, and particularly in the criminal justice system, what the criminal justice system is good at is trail them, nail them, and jail them. You follow these guys around, wait for them to do something wrong, arrest them, and put them back in jail. And we've done that for a very long time, and it doesn't decrease the chances that somebody's going to do another offense in the future. The research is crystal clear that if you catch these guys doing something good, tell them that they're doing something good and why you like it and why it's helpful for them, that they're much more likely to turn their life around. So we have a program we started years ago where staff go through a training called Catch 'Em Being Good that kind of explains the whole concept. And we have essentially kind of certificates that we give clients when we've caught them doing something good. Sometimes sometimes it might be, hey, you have two shoes on today. So that's good. Sometimes you really have to,
for some reason, and they're both yours
and they're on the right feet. For some of these guys, they're angry when they first get there. So catching them doing something good early on can be a little bit of a challenge for these guys, but we catch them doing something good. We give them a little certificate that essentially says, hey, nice job. That's what we want to see. And so they get one immediately for the immediate feedback. One goes in their file just because everything we do for the state has to be documented. And then one goes in a hat. And a couple times a week, we randomly draw a name out of that hat. And whoever wins that lottery gets free rent for the day, which for these guys is $17 a day, which is a big deal for these guys.
That is fun and smart. That's really smart. And we should be doing it with our kids and each other, shouldn't we, Bob?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, as a pastor of a church, that too often we, I think, you know, the kind of the model for church has been a little punitive, maybe. I don't know. I was talking about what you're not doing, you know, what you're doing wrong. And I don't think that that works real well. So it's a great lesson for all of us, whatever we're doing in life, I think. So.
We're all fortunate to have Evan Crist and Time to Change Community Corrections in this part of the world. So in Denver here, with thousands of listeners today, why don't you share how people could get involved and how they could learn more about what you do and maybe jump in and help?
Well, there's a website. If people want to learn more about community corrections specifically, there's a website. It's for the Colorado Community Corrections Coalition. The website is ccco.org, four C's and an O.org. And it will list all of the halfway houses in the state of Colorado and where they are. As far as people getting involved, I guess my primary request would be that people embrace the concept that offenders are coming back to our community. And I think for too long our society has looked at, once somebody gets arrested and they go to prison, whew, at least they're gone. Hmm. We don't have to worry about them again. Well, 96% of prisoners that go to prison come back. And we've just done a really bad job as a community setting up the system so that these guys can be successful when they do come back. So I think there's a variety of ways for people to help as far as mentoring these guys. Feel free to call a local halfway house and see if there's things that they can, if they need. If you're an employer, most of these guys are great workers. My experience has been about 80% of these guys are really good workers. And we talked earlier about how it's difficult for these guys to get jobs, and that's true. But once employers give a handful of our guys a chance, they love it, and they call us. And every once in a while, we get a call, hey, send me 8 guys. I really need to hire some guys, because they know they'll be there. They know they'll be sober. And they know that if they mess up or give them any attitude, then they can call the halfway house, and we'll nip that in the bud pretty quickly. So
they'll be dealing with.
Yeah, that's right. That's worse than going to the principal's office.
Big E.
That's right. So if you're an employer, give these guys a shot. One of the things that we're seeing more and more that just breaks my heart is mentally ill offenders. That the mental health system in the state of Colorado is just really going through a tough time, and the economy is such that something has to be cut. And unfortunately, that tends to be the thing that policymakers feel the need to cut. And so we've got people with severe mental illness that are getting arrested in large part because of it. And when they get back out, there's just so little resources for them. So I guess my first thought would be embrace the concept. If somebody decides they're trying to put some sort of alternative to incarceration treatment facility near where you live or work, you know, ask questions and think about whether this could be an okay thing. Because we talked earlier about the process of me getting my community correction facility zoned. And it's an extraordinary process. The, you know, NIMBY, not in my backyard, is alive and well. And I fully appreciate the fears that people have, but they almost never come to fruition. And my experience has been that once somebody has an experience in which they live near a halfway house, they actually see it more of an asset rather than a liability. So look around. I mean, mental health centers, halfway houses, jail, work release programs, there are lots and lots of different places that these guys really, really need help. Both just, you know, emotional support and somebody to have lunch with them and go, you can make this, and much more solid support of giving them a job or clothes or something like that.
Give me a quick shot here, Bob, on the forgiveness of sin. I think God really has the power and the desire to give us fresh starts?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking how, you know, really he's the God of the second chance and the third chance and the fourth chance. But, you know, Jesus, that's what he's all about. When those guys, and it's kind of a great image, by the way, of the buddies carrying their friend that needed to get healed to Christ. And, you know, he couldn't get there, but there were four of them, and they carried him and really cared enough to get up on the roof, tear a hole in the roof, lower him down in front of Jesus. And instead of Jesus saying, you're healed, the first thing he says is, your sins are forgiven. You know, I mean, he's the God of forgiveness. And, you know, Psalm 103, as far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. So
God instilling that in you, Evan, and through your own faith, you enter the system in such a way as to embrace all these people and not be easy about it. I mean, I know the journey you're on. It's tough following all the rules and all the regulations, but you're doing it with brilliance and joy, and you're helping a lot of people. So thank you for who you are and what you do.
My pleasure.
You've been a
great
book
about it, Evan. We need you to write a book about all this.
Well, you know, it's interesting. one of the things you said about the church being more punitive, I used to see the Bible as a list of don'ts. Now I see it as a list of do's.
Good.
And I think this is one of the do's.
Cool. Catch them doing good, folks. Do that with your kids. Do that with anybody that maybe's gotten into trouble that in your neighborhood, in your community that you've heard about. And go to that CCCO.org and learn more about the whole community corrections world that you may not know about, because there are some superstars out there like Evan Crist. Did you
know?
Say
and I discovered he's a genius in this time. I've discovered just listening to
it.
I know.
What do you want to say to your wife?
She's the primary evidence that I'm brilliant.
Thanks for being
on the show, Evan. Thanks for being with us, man.
Bob, I'll see you next week. And we don't know you folks, but we love you. Appreciate you listening and letting us know you're enjoying what we're doing here on You Get the Blessing. So have a good week.